National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Happy New Year. This week on Register Radio, we ring in 2026 with a final look back at 2025. We're joined by one of the perpetual pilgrims and Register contributor, Marina Frattaroli, to assess the fruits of the Jubilee. And then we meet a new staff writer at the Register, Gigi Duncan, and hear about her first months of reporting and covering the challenging stories of the last year. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. I'm joined, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Shannon, happy New Year and a belated Merry Christmas as well.
Same to you, Matthew. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, so not only did 2025 draw to a close this last week, but Pope Leo XIV is preparing to bring an end to the Jubilee in just a few days. It was a powerful year of faith and pilgrimage, and as it ends, we can start discerning its fruits. But Shannon, let's talk a little bit about some of the highlights for you, and especially our coverage this year of the Jubilee.
Yeah, well, if you can remember back as far as Christmas Eve 2024, that's when Pope Francis opened the holy door of St. Peter's Basilica to initiate the Jubilee of Hope. Two days later, he opened the holy door at the Rabibia prison, if you remember that. And then what commenced was really dozens of special Jubilee events over the past year. There were Jubilees for first responders and digital influencers and those with disabilities and medical workers and all sorts of different groups who traveled to Rome to participate in the Jubilee events. The most recent one was just last week, the Jubilee of Prisoners. I believe that was the last sort of official Jubilee.
Yeah.
And something
we have to do
like
a shout out to also the Jubilee for marching bands, because I happen to be in Rome for that.
Oh, Kaka, we forget. So something like north of 3 million people, you know, participated according to the latest Vatican statistics. But as you know, other events sort of overshadowed the Jubilee, the death of Pope Francis and the election of Pope Leo, first and foremost among them. And yet the Jubilee of Hope and the spiritual dimension of that was not so much overshadowed, but it was sort of the common thread that ran through all these tremendous events over the past year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the great services that the Register provides is we've been there every step of the way covering the Jubilee, but also providing a lot of analysis and thoughtful coverage. And I know we've had some very special contributors this year.
Yes. So our thought at the end of this year, and by the way, it doesn't end. The Holy Door won't close until January the 6th.
Right. Epiphany.
But we reached out to a number of people who participated in the Jubilee in some fashion to get their insights from where they sit. What were the fruits of the Jubilee? And one of those people we're happy to have on the show is Marina Frattaroli. Marina was a perpetual pilgrim on the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage. She was on the Elizabeth Ann Seton route. Marina, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
In the reflection that you wrote for the Register, you talked about this experience you had as a Eucharistic pilgrim, which I know was an amazing experience for you. But when it was over, you were kind of wondering sort of, what's next? And I guess the short answer was the Jubilee. How did you wind up participating in it?
Yes, well, it was definitely, I was sad that the National Eucharistic Revival came to an end this year. It was what had evangelized me about the truth of the Eucharist and what ultimately led me to join the Catholic Church. So it was a big consolation that that ended during the Jubilee. And so having been a pilgrim in the U.S., walking across the country with the Eucharist on the Seton route, it was a very natural thing to sort of embrace the Pilgrim of Hope identity. And then it ended up leading me to all kinds of adventures, including going to Rome, and then also getting to explore so many Jubilee sites stateside as well.
Yeah, Marina, I believe that you are also somebody who entered the church in 2022. And then here you were just a few years later on the Seton route as a perpetual pilgrim. What has this Jubilee year meant to you then as somebody who came into the church?
Yeah, well, it's been really special. I have slowly gotten to know the church in my 3 years as a Catholic. And I would say that, you know, at first I sort of got to know my own community where I entered in law school. And then I got to know the U.S. Catholic community through the National Eucharistic Revival. And then this Jubilee has been like such a beautiful introduction into how global and amazing the church is, and getting to be in Rome with Catholics from every corner of the globe was a wonderful perspective on how universal our church truly is. So that was one of the beautiful fruits, was just getting to know how vast the church is. Yeah.
As a cradle Catholic, I should let you know that we don't have these jubilees every year. So I have to break that to you. It's kind of a rare thing. And you picked a great time to be in Rome. You were there for the dual canonization mass of Saints Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. In a few words, what were your main takeaways from that experience?
Yeah, it was really one of the more breathtaking moments I've experienced, because it was my first time in Rome as a Catholic, my first time in St. Peter's Square as a Catholic, and it was completely teeming full of people like me in my 20s, full of people from all ages. And, you know, it was a canonization mass with the Pope. So getting to see the Pope in St. Peter's Square for the first time, it was just stunning. And it was amazing to feel the energy in the crowd and the excitement. I think particularly among young people, but so many types of all kinds of people were there. And it was just a moment full of hope, I would say, where I could just feel how everyone felt the church growing as we introduce these new canonizations and are feeling inspired to grow in their own walk through these men's amazing examples. So that was really special. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to echo Shannon's admonition, too, that we won't have another Jubilee, apparently, till 2033. So you have a 12-year wait for the next one. But this one clearly was of great significance to you and to millions of other people. You have you make a great point in one of your reflections for the Register, where you discuss the fact that there was a point, as you write, where in Rome, one of the holy door queues was too long for your group to enter. That was a beautiful contrast, though, wasn't it, to the experience of the Jubilee door back in Texas, where you're from?
Absolutely. I think it's easy to sort of focus on the flashy moments. You know, the holy door. And it is so special to see the Pope opening those doors. And it is something for us to that can unite us. But I think that what sort of a conversion that happened in me this year was not so much, you know, living for those mountaintop moments, not just, you know, trying to get to Italy and then getting there, but then coming back home and learning that, you know, just like the Christian life, the Jubilee is a marathon, not a sprint. And it is really more about faithfulness in the everyday. And, you know, if I was in Rome, I would wait in such a long line to get through that holy door. But, you know, if it's a Sunday afternoon, am I willing to drive down to the cathedral to get that same indulgence? And so in that way, the Jubilee, it is kind of a test of like, because there is so much opportunity, there are so many graces, there are so many chances for us to grow and for us to, you know, love God through participating in these invitations. And so, yeah, it was a beautiful realization to see that maybe even, you know, that going to the cathedral is a more enriching experience than Rome can be, because it's where I am and it's in my ordinary life, and I can invite others to it in a way that I can't necessarily to Rome. And so, yeah, I'm feel so grateful that we have all these Jubilee sites. And it's also been fun just sort of moving around the country to sort of get to experience how rich our church is with all these sites stateside as well.
Yeah, yeah. Marina, I want to make sure that we urge our listeners who haven't yet taken advantage of the Jubilee and the plenary indulgence that we can offer. And in short, that's a remission of the temporal punishment due to us, which is an amazing thing. And I just want to urge our listeners to go onto their diocesan websites, and you'll see how to participate, how to obtain that indulgence. And there still is time until January. The doors close on January the 6th.
Absolutely, it's really such a unique time, and I think that these opportunities really are invitations to transformation, and they're just so powerful. So we absolutely need to be making use of that.
Yeah, you know, in the short time we have left, I want to ask you about the connection between your experience as a perpetual pilgrim. Here we were at the National Eucharistic Revival, and now we have the conclusion of this Jubilee year. Can you talk about the beautiful symmetry between the two of those?
Yeah, so the word pilgrim is so fun because it's nice to take on an identity, and it's nice to kind of, it implies adventure, and it implies, you know, new horizons, which is wonderful. But the reality of pilgrimage is something different. It's kind of, it can be dirty, it can be sweaty, it can be hard, it can, you know, drag on, because when we were walking on the Seton route, sometimes, you know, we walked many miles in the heat, and you
in
know
the summer, yeah.
in the summer heat. And so I think that is sort of the dual identity of the pilgrim. Is it's something special, it's something unique, but it's also something that's sort of ongoing and hard. And so I'm feeling that identity now at the close, because it was, I'm striving to be grateful for all of these gifts I've been given through the Jubilee, through these sites I've gotten to visit, through the, you know, the Rome visit. But I'm also really trying to take these lessons of endurance, lessons of, you know, the beauty that hope can bring, mm-hmm. and the importance of sort of offering that hope to others, because, you know, we are called to be a missionary people. And I think that was one of the beautiful things of the Jubilee, was that it created so many talking points with people. There was a lot of invitation to that. And to remember that that is a constant invitation, that we are always meant to be proclaiming this message of hope. And I think Pope Leo has done a great job of reminding us that we're to take that gratitude, we're to take that hope with us, and that, you know, every Sunday Mass is a beautiful opportunity to step into that reality, and that and we can invite others into that and to receive the hope we've received.
Well, a perfect way to conclude our brief conversation here today. So thank you so much, Marina, for your work as a pilgrim, for your work during the Jubilee, and your work as a contributor to the Register.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next up, we talk with Gigi Duncan, one of the Register's young, new, talented reporters. Stay tuned to Register Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen here, as always, with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. One of the wonderful things about working for EWTN News is the opportunity to meet and to work with new staff writers, new reporters, all part of the ongoing coverage of news for the National Catholic Register and EWTN News writ large. Well, we are delighted, in fact, to welcome this week our newest staff writer. And we're going to be able to talk about some of the great pieces that she's already worked on, as well as a preview of Seek. I'm talking about Gigi Duncan, who recently joined the National Catholic Register. Gigi, welcome to Register Radio.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have to ask, how have your first months gone?
Yeah, so far so good. It's been a great experience covering a wide variety of different stories, get out in DC and cover different things. It's been a really great experience so far.
Yeah, Gigi, you joined us just in November, and already, as Matthew alluded to, you've had some really fantastic stories. Just to name a couple of them, you recently wrote about the motorsports major at Belmont Abbey College in North Carolina. You wrote about a wonderful exhibit at the Museum of the Bible here in D.C. on the Dead Sea Scrolls. You wrote about Tom Brady cloning his dog and whether that's something Catholics can do or not. So it's been a variety of a real great variety of pieces. Are there any at this early stage that were especially satisfying for you?
Yeah, so with Christmas being this past week, I was able to cover the life-size nativity set at this parish in the South Carolina state in Greenville. And it's a parish that my family goes to often, and they have this giant life-size nativity set. And for the past few years, I would go there and just look at it and wonder what the story behind it was. Especially one piece, it's this camel that weighs over 1,600 pounds. So you kind of look at it and you wonder, okay, first off, how are they even able to get that all the way over here? You know, who shipped that? So I was actually able to speak with the Abel family in Germany to kind of learn about this vast history they have in their village with wood carving and sacred art. And they make art like that for churches all over the world. So kind of being able to take something that I had seen, you know, China at home and being able to tell the story behind it a bit more. That was something that was really exciting. And I thought it was definitely a fun story to cover for Christmas because people from all over in South Carolina go to see it every year. A man proposed to his girlfriend there after the Christmas Eve Mass one year. So yeah, it was really special being able to cover that and to kind of bring that story.
Yeah, Gigi, introduce yourself to our listeners. Where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And what brought you to EWTN?
Yeah, so I'm from New Jersey, but I ended up going to school at the University of South Carolina, like many people from the North are nowadays. But yeah, so I grew up in a very Catholic household, but it wasn't really something I took seriously of my own accord until I got to college. It was kind of a lonely first semester with COVID being in 2020, and there wasn't much going on, and there were some roommate issues. So I was actually really considering transferring, but then I got a bit more plugged in with the Catholic campus ministry there with a Focus missionary who introduced me to her Bible study, and it just totally took off, you know, wanting to actually learn about the faith more of my own accord, rather than just, you know, reciting things, going through the motions without thinking about it. So yeah, I went to school there and graduated in 2024. And then I'd always been familiar with EWTN just because my mom always had recordings of Mother Angelica on her TV. And I was always familiar with it, and I always loved writing and marketing and kind of the more creative side of business, which I studied at school. So when an opportunity for an internship came up with Catholic News Agency, summer of 2024, it just kind of felt like all these pieces were falling into place, kind of combining both my love for writing and just wanting to learn and share more about the faith.
Yeah, and one of the fun things that has been able to follow with your reporting has been some of these great sort of feature pieces. I think in particular of one that I want to flag for everybody. You know, it was just a couple of days ago. And that is A Charlie Brown Christmas at 60. Now, those of us of a certain age can remember that Charlie Brown Christmas, so certainly not necessarily in my case when it premiered, but one of these great moments in television history Talk a little bit about your piece, because I think you do such a nice job of, as you write, the cartoon that proclaims the heart of Christmas.
It was a really interesting experience kind of going through and watching it again. You know, it's something that had always been on TV growing up. And, you know, it's always a Christmas classic for people to watch. But kind of going through it around this time, I was really in awe of just kind of the simplicity of it all. Even, you know, 60 years on, we're still kind of faced with Christmas as being really consumerism heavy. And, you know, people worry about gifts and decorations and all these different things. But maybe they're kind of missing the true meaning of Christmas and, you know, simplicity of the incarnation. And to kind of have, you know, a child proclaim the Gospel of Luke describing the nativity in a cartoon 60 years ago, and that was hardly the norm, and it still really hasn't been nowadays. I just thought that was so interesting and how relevant it still is today.
And the music's still pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Gigi, you're hitting the road. You're going to be one of the journalists for Media Btn covering the SEEK conference. Explain what is SEEK and what's going to be going on.
Yeah, so SEEK is this big conference put on by Focus missionaries each year. So Focus, they kind of send recent college graduates out to college campuses all across the country. And there they really focus on Bible studies, mentorship, and discipleship with students. And their goal really is to kind of reach out to students all over to evangelize and share the love of Christ with them. And that was something I was very fortunate to experience during my college years. So each year they put on a big SEEK conference where they kind of gather different speakers and vendors. And it's just this really great place for people to come together and to celebrate the sacraments and just to hear talks on all different kinds of topics. You know, some are oriented more for men, for women, for couples, for evangelization. It's just a really great way to kind of bring all these communities together and to just share in that love for Christ.
Yeah. Matthew, I should explain that, you know, one of the things that we're happy to have Gigi on the staff for, one of her subbeats is really Gen Z. And there's just a huge story there with young people, not only in the United States, but in other countries coming into the church.
That's right.
We saw these big numbers last Easter of student age men and women coming into the church. And there's understanding that and quantifying it where we can, and really talking to what it is that's drawing young people to the church is a big part of what Gigi's going to be doing, certainly in this next year. But you've been to Focus, Gigi. You're a Gen Zer yourself. What are you observing as far as what's kind of happening in this younger generation right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. Being from New Jersey, I would often kind of hear people talking about, oh, well, the church is outdated. You know, these parishes are closing, consolidating, all of that. But then especially going to college in the South and being involved with Focus, I just saw the complete opposite. I mean, there's so many young people on fire for the faith. The churches, you know, at my college and where I'm from in the South too, always packed with young families. I think it's really just we live in an age of isolation and anxiety and depression and all these things going on in the world. And I really think young people are just seeking truth and tradition and beauty, and they're finding that in the Catholic faith. And I think it's been a really beautiful thing to see. I mean, even just over the course of 4 years in college, you know, our little chapel is always packed. Even the 9 p.m. Mass on a Sunday night, there was no room because more people were entering into the church and they were kind of seeking that tradition and that beauty that, you know, they might not be able to find in things elsewhere in the world. So it's been really a great privilege to kind of see that and to also grow in my own faith alongside that.
Yeah, so Gigi, how did your family help with that formation in your own life? Because we hear so much about the role of family.
Yeah, so I really credit it to both my parents, especially my mom, just always being open to talking about the faith, answering questions, you know, kind of helping me to not just only go through the routine, but also, you know, understanding why, like, she would pray a rosary with us every night growing up. Anytime we're all home, we still do a family rosary. But just kind of seeing that nurturing of the faith, and even, you know, in high school when I didn't care about it as much as I should have, just having that foundation, going into college, being on my own, being 10 hours away from home in New Jersey, just being able to have that and to kind of grow from there and to have a basis so that it was easier to delve into the faith on my own accord. It's, yeah, I'm just really grateful, especially for the witness of my parents and my brother, who also had a similar experience with Focus and campus ministry where he went to school in Alabama.
Yeah. Where did he go to school in Alabama?
University of Alabama.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we know that the faith is growing in all sorts of remarkable places. Well, Gigi, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you on a lot in the future. And very briefly, what are you working on?
Working on a Focus story about couples who were missionaries and they met their future spouses through Focus. To have that out kind of soon with Seek coming up, and just seeing all the different from Focus and, you know, placing Christ above everything else and saying yes to mission in life.
Well, like everyone else, I look forward to reading it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Shannon, we are ringing in a new year, but I want to take this moment to thank you for everything in 2025. And it's a joy doing this show with you. And thank you for everything you're doing for the Register.
Thank you, Matthew. I look forward to it every week. It's a great time to be with you.
Well, that's it for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Happy New Year. And until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care and God bless.